Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? Yes, it is Monday. The beginning of the week is here. I hope you guys are having a great start to your week. It's August 12th, 2019. I had a great weekend. Great weekend. A weekend filled with just, you know, I watched some preseason football. You know, that's what's whetting my appetite right now as we inch closer and closer towards the real thing, towards the NFL regular season. And college football, of course, right around the corner. So, you know, I sat around and watched some preseason NFL football. There's no preseason college football, thank goodness. my Cowboys lost. Hey, it's preseason. Who cares? They played the San Francisco 49ers. That was a 17-9 final. And there are some interesting storylines coming out of the NFL preseason. A few that I'll touch on just briefly, but, you know, it's just good to see football back on the old tube, right? Gotta love it. And today, actually this morning, Mark D'Antonio spoke to reporters as Michigan State football prepares for its upcoming season. Of course, August 30th, inside of the friendly confines of Spartan Stadium, Michigan State will take on Tulsa. So the Spartans are preparing for that matchup. And, you know, it's really cool being on campus because, especially around this time of the year, on the eve of the Michigan State football year, because as I'm walking around campus, I mean, you can hear, because the College of Communication Arts and Sciences here on the campus of MSU is not that far down the road from the Duffy Doherty Michigan State football building. And you can hear the crack of the pads. You can hear the whistles being blown. I mean, it's exciting just walking around campus when Michigan State football is practicing. So we'll play to you what Coach D had to say concerning the progress of his Spartan team just before, of course, that first game on August 30th, Friday night, inside of Spartan Stadium, okay? But also, I do want to comment also, when it comes to the NFL, this whole pass interference rule, you know, the challenge, as the NFL is now allowing coaches out there to challenge a perceived pass interference to try and overturn maybe a missed call or, you know, a no call, I should say, on the gridiron. Because right now, when you look at the statistics, and I know it's early, it's preseason NFL football right now, there aren't many pass interference challenges that are being reversed. And I'll try to explain why. And then on the back end of the show, we, of course, will have weekend winners for you, where we take a look at the weekend that was in the world of sports and beyond and bring to you some of my favorite stories that occurred from over the weekend. And, you know, of course, I love weekend winners because it goes beyond just your local sports talk. And this one will feature the great Serena Williams, who had an interesting emotional moment playing in the final of the Rogers Cup. I'll explain later on, all right? So a lot to get to. It's a busy, busy Monday show, as Mondays here on Current Sports customarily are. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. That is the number to call. You can also weigh in at Facebook, facebook.com/WKAR News. We've got the live stream up and running. No technical difficulties, knock on wood. And you can comment below that live stream. Is also, you can weigh in on Twitter. Tweet the show at WKAR News, and you can tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR. You know what's next? Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. Let's start here. Michigan State football recruiting news. As MSU football's 2020 recruiting class continues to take shape in steady fashion, Cole DeMarzo, he became the Spartans' 13th commitment and 12th three-star prospect to join Coach D's group for next season. 6'2", 200 pounds. He revealed his college choice last night on Twitter. He's a safety/outside linebacker from Hilton Head Island, South Carolina. He picked the Spartans over offers from Toledo, Cincinnati, Tulane, Air Force, and Appalachian State, among others. DeMarzo is rated the 31st best prospect in South Carolina and the number 119th outside linebacker in the 2020 class. That's according to 247 Sports. So again, Cole DeMarzo becoming the 13th commitment for Mark D'Antonio's class next season. All right, also more Michigan State football news. As MSU football appears to have added one more player to its 2019 recruiting class from a familiar place. Belleville, Michigan defensive lineman Jalen Hunt. He announced on Friday night on Twitter that he will be joining the Spartans this fall. 6'3", 260 pounds. He's a three-star recruit who signed with Iowa in December, but told Hawkeye Report .com in June that he was not admitted to Iowa and planned to go to junior college at Iowa Western Community College. Now, in July, coaches at Iowa Western told the Des Moines Register that Hunt did not report there. So this is what Hunt wrote on Twitter. Quote, "It's been a long 4 months, but everything is all wrapped up. After all the stuff that happened with Iowa and me not being eligible, and me having to take an online summer class, also retake the SAT, I am proud to say that I will be joining Michigan State." So again, not sure why he didn't report for the Iowa Western Community College football team, and who knows what went down with Iowa, with him not being admitted. Interesting there. But again, Jalen Hunt will be on the Michigan State football roster for this season. All right, the Detroit Tigers, they split the weekend set against the Kansas City Royals, losing the finale yesterday 10-2. The Tigers are 35-80. And the Kansas City Royals, talk about two just bad teams in the majors. The Royals sit at 43-76. So, yeah, there you have that. All right, the Detroit Pistons are working to add the number 2 overall pick of the 08 NBA draft to the training camp roster. Now, multiple sources with firsthand knowledge of the situation told the Detroit Free Press that the Pistons are working toward an agreement on a one-year deal with free agent forward Michael Beasley. Now, when finalized, the deal would be non-guaranteed, meaning that he would have to make the team to earn a veteran minimum salary. Now, a successful agreement would likely set up a cat battle with big man Christian Wood for the team's 15th spot on the active roster. But, again, it looks as though Michael Beasley has at least a shot at landing a spot on the Detroit Pistons roster. All right, also, Barcelona beat Napoli at Michigan Stadium at the Big House in some international football at the Big House. 4-0 was the final on Saturday. I must say this, though, because this is getting a lot of traction. This got a lot of traction after that one was said and done. The attendance for that match was pretty poor. Now, I think some of it had to do with the fact that Lionel Messi did announce early last week that he wouldn't participate due to health concerns. But, I mean, we're talking about 43,000 empty seats at the Big House. So a bit puzzling, because if you look at attendance from the past, when it comes to international games at the Big House, which is a relatively new thing that they've been doing, attendance has been off the charts. So I don't know if Messi has that much pull. I mean, he's a pretty big-time player, but, man, 43,000 empty seats at the Big House for that one. All right, well, Matt Patricia launched his challenge flag onto the field from atop his coaching perch behind the Detroit Lions bench last Thursday in that exhibition matchup against the defending Super Bowl champs, New England Patriots. He did so more out of curiosity than with any hard and fast expectation that there was actually a penalty on the play. Patricia and many of his NFL coaching brethren are trying to understand how officials will mediate new rules that allow pass interference penalties, now both called and not to be reviewed. And the thought is the preseason is as good as any time to really test this thing out. This is what Matt Patricia had to say concerning the pass interference, the new pass interference challenge that is being implemented in the National Football League. Quote, I think a lot of us coaching-wise, we're just trying to figure out how this is all going to be officiated. So any opportunity I thought would come up in the game where maybe it will be an opportunity for them to take a look at it and see how they officiated, I wanted to try and get that situation. So far, only two pass interferences of the 17 that have been challenged have been overturned so far. More on that story in just a moment, and also some really somber and unexpected news coming out of the world of the NFL today, as Pittsburgh Steelers wide receivers coach Daryl Drake, who spent more than 30 years molding some of the best players at the position at both the collegiate and professional level, he has passed away sadly at the age of 62, just 62 years old. Now, the team said Drake, who joined the coaching staff in 2018, he died early yesterday morning. This is coming from Steelers president Art Rooney II. Quote, Daryl had such an impact on the players he coached and everyone he worked with throughout his entire career. He was a passionate coach and had a tremendous spirit toward life, his family, his faith, and the game of football. Drake, a native of Louisville, Kentucky, he played collegiately at Western Kentucky. He spent one season in the Canadian Football League and participated in a pair of NFL training camps before returning to Western Kentucky to pursue a master's degree. He went into coaching as a grad assistant at Western Kentucky in 1983, the beginning of a career that included stops in the college ranks at Georgia, Baylor, and Texas. Again, Daryl Drake passing away at the age of 62. And there have been many tributes out there addressing this passing. Daryl Drake, a giant when it comes to coaching in the NFL ranks, known to, of course, coach some of the best, of course, like Antonio Brown, longtime Pittsburgh Steelers wideout. All right, and last but certainly not least, the first time that Simone Biles performed a triple-double at the U.S. Gymnastics Championships in Kansas City, she wasn't pleased after soaring through the air to complete two flips and three, yes, three, full twist on Friday, she stumbled. Yesterday, the 22-year-old did it again and stuck the landing this time. It's the first time a woman has done so in competition. How amazing. If you have not seen this video, check it out. Unreal. Simone Biles, again, I dub her the Michael Jordan of women's gymnastics. There has never been a greater gymnast in the history of the sport. I don't care what nation you're talking about. Now, the reigning world champion finished the competition yesterday with the U.S. all-around title. It is her sixth. Previously, the only woman to win six U.S. all-around gold medals was Clara Scroth Lomondy, who won her titles between 1945 and 1952. But Simone Biles, again, doing something that has never been done so in competition. two flips, three full twists. Absolutely amazing. All right. That does it for your current sports quick hit headliners. 517-355-WKAR. 517-355-9527. That is the number to call. Would love to hear from you. You can also weigh in at facebook.com/WKAR News. Comment right below our live stream there. And you can tweet us. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or at least shoot me a follow. And do the same on our Twitter page at WKAR News. Folks, happy Monday to you all. Thank you so much for allowing Current Sports to be a part of your Monday afternoon. We've got Jack Kerwin behind the glass on this August 12th, 2019 edition of Current Sports. Jack, how you doing, my man?
Doing great. Had a pretty good weekend. Can't complain too much. And I'm 21 in 9 days, so can't get here soon enough.
Whoa. That's the big one. You do know that. I mean, that's like, it's all down here from there, Jack. I mean, after 21, it's like, oh, okay. Every birthday becomes like, oh, I'm just getting older at this point. I mean, at 25, this rule makes no sense to me. You can rent a car.
But it makes it tougher for my move because, actually, we're getting a U-Haul on Saturday, and my dad has to rent it because I can't yet. So I've never understood that rule.
Never understood it whatsoever. So 25, I guess you got that to look forward to. But 21 is the big one.
Yeah, I'll get to have my first sip of alcohol. It'll be exciting, man.
That's awesome stuff. Yes, your very first one. All right, Jack Kerwin, again, manning the board behind the glass on this Monday edition of the show. And can I be fully honest? You just played, what is that? That's Juice WRLD, Lucid Dreams,
yeah,
right?
Lucid Dreams, yeah, the instrumental.
And, you know, that's a sample of one of the most famous songs in the history of music, Sting's Shape of My Heart. And that song annoys me because listening to Juice WRLD rap over that track just ruins it for me. I just want to get that off my chest. I hate that.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it is a very well-known song. So, yeah, no, I mean, I like the song, but I think that's a fair criticism.
It's horrible. It's horrible, man. Sting should be, well, he's not dead. I was about to say he should be rolling around in his grave. But no, Sting is still alive and well. Sting is my guy. I love Sting. All right. Okay. There's a few things I want to get to on today's Current Sports. Also, you just passed some breaking news to me, Jack, before our headliners, and Tate Martell, who previously played quarterback at Ohio State, who decided to transfer from Ohio State to the University of Miami, he has lost the starting job. He is not going to be the starter at the U. It's being reported here. I'm seeing here multiple outlets reporting this, 247 Sports, CBS Sports, many, many people reporting this, that Miami has named Jaren Williams. Don't know who that is, but Jaren Williams is now the starting quarterback for Miami over transfer Tate Martell, as well as quarterback Cozy Perry. So a bit shocking. I mean, anytime you would think a guy who transfers – a guy who plays the quarterback position, played the quarterback position at Ohio State, who transfers into a program like the University of Miami, you would think that brother's going to be the starting quarterback. But
Uh-uh. And that's just the beauty of competition, isn't it, Jack? Gotta love it.
Well, it sure is. And I mean, to your point, Joe Burrow transferred to LSU. I think it was just LSU, just I think it was a year ago. And, you know, I think they were the second or third best team in the SEC West last year. I think they were second only behind Alabama. You know, he came in and, you know, Ohio State didn't miss a beat losing him, obviously, but he was a real impact player in the SEC. So it's kind of surprising to see Tate Martell not get the starting gig in Miami.
You got to win the job. At the end of the day, you got to go in there every single day during practice. And you know, who cares where you transfer from? You know, what can you do? What can you show in practice to try and win this job? And apparently, they like what Jaren Williams did over what Tate Martell has done. So there is that news. Before we hit our first break, I want to comment here on our first topic, though, and that is the new NFL pass interference rule. Because as you heard in our headliners, it's really interesting. Now, I know I'm not trying to overreact here because this is NFL preseason football. And, you know, last week we just saw the first of 4 weeks of the NFL preseason. And there were a lot of coaches just kind of testing the waters and seeing how this rule would play out. In Matt Patricia's case, it looks as though he was just trying to just experiment and see how this thing is going to affect the game, if any, come next season. I believe it will have an impact on the game. How much, we just don't know. Because the statistics show that through the first 17 games of the preseason, 15 challenges of pass interference penalties with only one call overturned. Now, four teams, the Buccaneers, the Seahawks, Broncos, and my Cowboys, were unsuccessful challenging called defensive pass interference penalties, and a fifth in the Buffalo Bills were unsuccessful appealing an offensive pass interference flag. So what we're seeing, again, through the first 17 games of the NFL preseason is that, for the most part, the NFL officials are sticking to what is being called on the football field, and they believe that they have gotten it right. So the Vikings, Minnesota, challenged a no-call on a completed pass looking for an offensive pass interference penalty with no luck. And the other nine challenges, including the Detroit Lions, came from teams hoping to get a defensive pass interference penalty on review. And that didn't happen. So the New York Jets were actually the only team to win their challenge. And that's when corner Corey Ballantyne, he hooked the arm of receiver Tim White, interfering with the play. So just how big of an impact this rule will have on the game is yet to be seen. But again, through the first 17 games of the season, they are sticking to what is being called on the field. Now, as I let it be known, when this rule was announced, when it came out that the NFL was going to adopt this rule, I was not a big fan of it. I am not a big fan of it. I think that it's a total overreaction of, yeah, we all can admit this. That was one of the most egregious calls, no calls, I should say, in NFL history. Watching what happened last year to the New Orleans Saints, I get it. But to go as far as to now allow pass interference flags to fly from the sideline is just a bit ridiculous to me. You know, but there are some out there. There are some out there that look at that no call and say, yeah, this is long overdue. I think that we are trying to over-police things now in the NFL. And then, you know, I even have flashbacks to, you know, what is a catch and what isn't a catch. You know, the catch rule in the NFL that has been modified, thank goodness. You know, that decided games. Lions fans, you know that, just as Calvin Megatron Johnson, right? I mean, that was just incredibly confusing and just over-regulating the game of football. And, you know, you can bring up just countless rules that have had a lot of backlash, the tuck rule, so on and so forth. I mean, and this is one of those things where, you know, pass interferences, I mean, really? This is football. There is going to be contact on 99.999% of the plays that we see on any given Sunday and any given Monday in the league, and now any given Thursday now in the National Football League. So if this is any indication, what we've seen, again, through those first 17 games, is if this is any indication of what's to come, we are going to see a lot of wasted time. A lot of wasted time, folks. And for me, when I look back at what happened to the Saints, it's not a question of what's wrong with the brew. It's a question of what's wrong with these referees that you are employing. That's been a long time criticism of mine and many out there, because any good official in the National Football League, you don't miss that call. You don't miss that call. But we've seen, and that's just one of many. That one stands out because, again, it's a big game. We're talking about a conference championship, a game that can potentially sway and decide who goes to the Super Bowl. And it happens on a stage like that. It's going to be in your face and replayed over and over and over. But you can just look at the NFL regular season on any given year, and the officiating has not been up to par. There have been bad calls for a long time now, and a lot of it has to do with the quality or lack thereof of NFL officials within the game. And now they've tried to make tweaks, and they've tried to, like, create teams of officials where you work with a certain team, you work with that team to develop chemistry, like any team out there, right? You know, because previously you had NFL referees just randomly being scheduled. You know, it kind of reminds you of the Michigan High School Athletic Association, right? You're scheduled, you show up to a game, you may not, or you may know some of the guys that you work with, and you go from there and just call the game as best as you can. But when the stakes are high in the National Football League and money is on the line, you would think that you would want these referees and teams so that they can develop chemistry, because that has a lot to do with, you know, the quality of officiating, I believe, on any given game. You know, if you're working with these guys game in and game out, you know, there's kind of a synergy that you have with those guys. That's any work environment, for that matter. Any job you go at, if you've got good chemistry with your coworkers that you see on a regular basis, and you're developing that, you may not at first, but if you develop that chemistry over time, it could lead to a great product, great productivity in any job that you're talking about. So I'm glad that they have made that modification. But this was an overreaction. I just think we're going to have times when watching the NFL game where a coach is going to throw the flag and you're just going to be sitting there and, you know, twiddling your thumbs for them to look at this. There's already becoming way too much downtime as it is when it comes to throwing the flag and challenging certain things. And now this is just going to add to it. So I'm not a big fan of it. And when it comes to what Patricia had to say about it, quote, just going through the process is the biggest thing, because when you get into those game situations, we want to know what exactly are they looking at. Part of it for us, too, is understanding how many different camera angles they have. See, there's so many layers to this thing. How many different camera angles they have. It's going to be different. That's part of the process. It's a 1 o'clock game. It's going to have a different camera angle than a Monday. A 1 o'clock game going to have a different camera angle than a Monday night game. And some of that's going to be involved, too, as we go through the season and try to figure out what's going to play to challenge and what's not. As many looks as we can get, I think we just got to take that opportunity. For me, what I've been reading a lot, Jack, when it comes to these pass interference penalties that have been challenged, is that there is a lot of gray area. You know, how much contact is too much contact? How, you know, when one official is looking through that lens and trying to decide whether or not they've missed a pass interference call, I just think there can be variations on how you perceive certain plays, you know, especially if there's some back and forth between that corner and that wide receiver. You know, how do you properly gauge, you know, who is having more contact or illegal contact with that said player on the opposite side? I just think that there's a lot of gray area here, and there's going to be a lot of people unhappy with some calls that may or may not go your team's way. Well, I don't know.
I agree with that 100%. And thinking about it more so, actually, I think the better solution probably would have been to change pass interference rules to the college rules, in that it's not a spot foul, it's only a 15-yard penalty. Because, you know, just because a guy interferes with a receiver's ability to catch the ball, that doesn't mean the guy was going to make the catch anyway. And furthermore, you know, these are highly subjective calls, and that's why, you know, to your point, people are still going to be upset with some calls that may or may not be made. And in making pass interference a spot foul, this penalty carries so much weight in, you know, subjectively whether or not a player is playing the ball as opposed to playing the man. So I think for me, hindsight's 20/20, obviously, but I think the better solution would have been to just change the interference rule to college and make it at most a 15-yard penalty.
I like that. I like that a lot because, again, Jack, I mean, you are going to see situations with this new rule where if a team is in desperation mode in the fourth quarter, why not call a Hail Mary? Just streak out your receivers, right? Have that quarterback just throw it up, jump ball time, and if it doesn't go your way, hey, challenge the thing.
Oh, now, by the way, there's pass interference on like every single Hail Mary.
Exactly.
Because they're lobbying in the end zone. There's five receivers and like seven defensive backs. There's pass interference on basically every Hail Mary.
Right. This is going to be a strategy that I think teams enact. Now, I believe we may have to, if you can look this up, Jack, I believe it changes under 2 minutes, just like a
normal. Well, there are no challenges under 2 minutes, so it's probably just up in the booth.
Up
it gets reviewed. Yeah.
Okay, up in the booth, it gets reviewed. And like you said, if it gets reviewed, and they do look at this, it could sway things tremendously. And it could affect wins and losses for certain teams. So I don't know. Now, again, if what we're seeing through these first 17 NFL preseason games is any indication of what's to come, then for the most part, the referees are going to get it right, I guess, in their eyes at least. But there's always going to be controversy, and I don't think anybody's going to be happy with this new rule. I just think you just made things way too complicated here, NFL, and you fed into the outrage that happened to the New Orleans Saints, and you felt like you had to do something when I don't believe you did. I just think that's just a bad case of bad officials. That's a really bad call. No call, excuse me. And again, a lot of outrage. I mean, heck, you even have this whole court case in which, you know, you have the NFL being sued, right? And if they do win, if NOLA does win that, you know, those proceeds are going to go to charity. So it's a good cause. But it's become that big of a topic. I just think the NFL overreacted. So are you a fan of the NFL pass interference rule? Challenge, I should say. I would love to hear from you. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. And Jack, I don't know if this will, I think it depends on who you ask. I don't know if this rule will turn off a lot of NFL fans. I think, a lot of NFL fans may be intrigued to see how this thing plays out. I think this may make them more interested to tune in on any given Sunday to see how this rule plays out.
What do you mean by turn off fans?
Like, get annoyed by this. Get annoyed, maybe. You know what I mean?
Maybe. People are still going to tune in, though.
People are still going to tune in just to see how this rule plays out. I think this may, pique some interest of NFL fans out there to see how this does affect games. And I think maybe after, like, the midway point of the NFL season, after we've seen a lot of these challenge flags thrown, then I think maybe the needle will go far to the side of annoyance.
I'm curious to see how it gets called too. I just feel like more and more that I think about it, you know, people joked for years that in the NFL we don't know what a catch is.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, are we not going to know what pass interference is either?
Exactly.
It's
man.
Possible, right?
That's possible. It really is possible. All right. 517-355-WKAR. 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, you'll get a chance to hear what head coach of the Michigan State football team, Mark D'Antonio, had to say on the eve of this morning's practice session as the Spartans get prepared for the 2019 football year right around the corner, folks. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Just two things I want to address and really just get off my chest before we roll in what the head coach of the MSU football team, Mark D'Antonio, had to say this morning on the eve of practice. I'm a bit annoyed as a Cowboys fan right now. It's a lot going on with my boys that have nothing to do with the X's and O's of the game. I found out this morning, courtesy of The Athletic. By the way, The Athletic, wow, they do some outstanding work, Jack. I don't know if you subscribe to The Athletic, but man, they go, talk about, you know, we talk about going beyond the X's and the O's here on Current Sports. That is, that should be their mantra. That's what they do, man.
Hell yeah, I subscribe to The Athletic. Yeah. The Athletic's awesome.
Awesome
Everything
stuff,
about it.
And, you know, I want to get Colton Pouncey on the show soon.
Yeah.
Probably this week or next week to talk some MSU football because he is the Michigan State football beat writer for The Athletic and does an outstanding job.
You see their announcement earlier today?
No.
They got Nick Bumgardner, the guy who had been covering Michigan football for so long. He's a football columnist now in this around Detroit, so he'll be doing the Lions, Michigan, and Michigan State for The Athletic.
Wow.
They're so opportunistic. I mean,
yeah,
you know, with all the...
If they see talent, Jack, I mean, they hop right on it, man. That's awesome for Nick. Congratulations to him. I didn't hear that.
And you know, like, with all the layoffs that, like, ESPN had with, you know, obviously their budget cuts and they have to pay their former players $1 billion each to go on SportsCenter and whatnot. You know, guys like Jason Stark got laid off and a lot of the hockey guys, you know, Craig Custance, who started up Athletic Detroit, they've been so opportunistic, how about that, about, you know, landing so many of these guys because they're talented, but, you know, they just didn't have a home at ESPN anymore.
Exactly. Well, The Athletic is a hub for many of those guys, and that's awesome for Nick. I didn't hear that news. That's great stuff. But, you know, I saw, you know, the reason I bring up The Athletic, because I saw on The Athletic today that my guy Dak Prescott, Dak, dude, what is wrong with you, man? They offered Dak Prescott, the Cowboys offered Dak Prescott $30 million a season. Not sure what the length of that contract was, but it would have made him the sixth highest paid quarterback in the National Football League. Dak is betting on himself, but dude, you look at the NFC right now for my Cowboys, and it's not like Dak Prescott is a stat stuffer. I would have taken that money in a heartbeat. I don't know what Dak Prescott is doing here. Dak, wake up, man. So that annoyed me today. That annoyed me today, Jack. I couldn't believe that.
So let me ask you this. You and I have butt heads over Dak Prescott plenty of times on this show.
We have.
Do you think Dak Prescott is worth $30 million?
No. That's
okay.
What I'm saying.
I was going to say, that's $8 million too much.
Oh, my. To become Dak Prescott would have became the sixth highest paid quarterback in the league, Jack. He's stealing money. He would be stealing money if he was signing that contract. So I could not believe. Because at first, the headline that I saw on Twitter said, Dak Prescott offered $30 million per season. So I stopped reading at that point, and I said, oh, boy. I kind of looked up at the stars and said, oh, yes. And then I looked back down, and it says, Prescott denies. And I said, what? You got to be kidding me. So I don't know, man. I don't know. That frustrated me today. And also, you know, Ezekiel Elliott is still in Mexico training, and you still got to pay Amari Cooper. Yeah, Jerry Jones isn't – they talked to Jerry Jones about it, and he's fine. He's chill. You know, and I get it. Jerry Jones has been through a lot as owner of the Dallas Cowboys, so this doesn't scare him. He's not – I mean, he's cool as a cucumber. He says, hey, I'm fine. We're going to get these deals done. We'll be all right. If Dak Prescott ends up getting more than 30 mil per year, wow, Jack.
Or anywhere in the range of 30 million per year.
Right.
Because, I mean, you always talk about how the next quarterback becomes the highest paid, right? You know, between, right. You know, we saw it with first Matt Stafford and then Jimmy Garoppolo and Kirk Cousins. And, you know, now Russell Wilson, I believe, is the highest paid. The problem is Dak isn't in that threshold of guys. So no. He can't be the next guy to make X amount of dollars because he's not. I mean, you want to argue whether or not Matt Stafford's worth $27.5 million, and I think you can make a pretty compelling argument after his year last year that he's not, right? But I mean, Dak Prescott is absolutely not worth $30 million, and I don't see how you can win tying that much money into him.
Yeah, if you look at Dak's numbers, no, I agree with you. Now, winning, he has done a lot of winning. I told you, he's the second most winningest quarterback in the league since he's entered the NFL. Number one is Tom Brady. And again, you look at what he did to in last season with my Cowboys. He's had some playoff success, but $30 million a year, I mean, that's robbing the bank for Dak Prescott. So, yeah. And also Antonio Brown. What is wrong with Antonio Brown?
He's a crazy person.
Oh, my God.
He's actually a crazy person.
He may be, Jack. I mean, he threatened retirement. If the whole frostbitten feet wasn't enough.
Crazy person.
Right? He threatens retirement because of a helmet situation. The NFL is trying to make the game safer by implementing new helmets. All right? And I get it. Antonio Brown, you're comfortable as an athlete with this helmet. As an athlete, your equipment is big. That's a big part of you. And you've been rocking this helmet for a long time. But just because the NFL is implementing a new helmet for safety reasons, trying to keep players safe, you don't like it. And you go as far as to threaten retirement when you're already not practicing with the Oakland Raiders in your first season with the team because of this whole cryotherapy situation and your feet. And now you create this distraction that's not needed for Gruden and the Raiders. They already have a lot of pressure on them coming into this season after what happened last season. You're already on hard knocks. You threaten retirement because you don't like the helmet that the NFL wants you to wear.
You know, didn't you kind of give the Steelers the benefit of the doubt when all this AB drama was going down last year because they're such a great franchise?
I did.
And now that he's in Oakland, aren't you just kind of, you could just tell he's a crazy person.
He's the classic egotistical wide receiver. And I think AB, though, is taking it to another level to threaten retirement. I mean, he's reminding me now of former Cowboys wide receiver Terrell Owens, who had drama like this. Then the whole video being recorded in the locker room. Actually, and I was listening to my guy. You know, I'm a Colin Cowherd fan. I was listening to him today, and he said that he texted a guy who's a former player for the Pittsburgh Steelers who talked to Mike Tomlin over the weekend, head coach of the Steelers, Mike Tomlin. And Mike Tomlin said, man, if you only knew how much stuff we had to keep under wraps when it comes to Antonio Brown when he was a player for us.
And that was just my next thought, is that when you have John Gruden isn't going to keep stuff under wraps the way Tomlin was. Tomlin is, I mean, he rules with an iron fist, and he's all about, you know, controlling the locker room and, you know, keeping guys under wraps because, you know, that's how they built that winning culture. So I believe that 100%.
Definitely. Now, in kind of Antonio Brown's defense, when it comes to that quote from this player who talked to Mike Tomlin, I'll say this. In any NFL locker room, you're going to have to cover some stuff up. It's an NFL locker room. You know, there's drama left and right, especially you're trying to protect your superstars. That just happens. But I'm pretty sure that when it comes to Antonio Brown, he had more drama than most players because he's AB. He's Antonio Brown. All right, I'll leave it there. I'm excited to watch Hard Knocks tomorrow night. I tell you that. I will tell you that. All right, now to MSU football. I want to play for you some sound hot off the presses from this morning. Pre-practice, Michigan State football, of course, preparing for the 2019 season. Michigan State opening up the season on Friday, August 30th. 2019 against Tulsa inside of Spartan Stadium. Here is Mark D'Antonio first addressing the running back competition throughout training camp.
Running backs look good. Had good scrimmages. Offense actually won the scrimmage. That was, I guess, a noticeable thing there. But Elijah Collins looked good. You know, Hayward looked good. You know, all four of them really looked good. Anthony looked good. He's dinged up a little bit today, so he'll be out today, but he looked good as well.
How do you approach this week? I mean, you're kind of midway through, a week and a half in. They have a week and a half really to go until Tulsa, so how do you approach a week like this one?
Well, I think there's still things that we have to do. We have to start working towards some of the different things we got our base stuff in, we got all those type of things. Now I think we start working on things you may see or things you may want to do in sort of different situations.
What the offense do to win? What kind of things would look?
I thought the quarterbacks all played well. I thought Wirky had a good day. Lombardi, good day. And I think the other day is really coming along.
With 18 days to go until your season opener, Coach, where do you feel like your team is, specifically the offense?
I think we're hungry. I think we're becoming much more confident in a lot of different respects. We've got a lot of live work against each other, and you know, when you do that, there's going to be bumps and bruises, but we got to find out some things. So we're going to do that, and we're going to take those steps.
What kind of things specifically do you guys still need to find out?
Well, you know, you never know what's going on until game day, I guess. On game day, you start to find out things as you move through the season, but I think as much as anything, we're still trying to square away things position-wise, especially the twos, and giving opportunities to young players and letting everybody progress. And what we've tried to do is make sure that everybody's got reps. So we're working different drills, two spot. In other words, the same drill, two different places. And scrimmaging as such, some. So it's been competitive, and everybody's gotten reps. So we evaluate.
Do you remember the score from Friday, Mark?
38-37.
What was the sort of the...
Always. Always going to be a last play.
Do you remember their last scenario, or the deciding sort of situation that ended?
Yeah, they hit one on 4th and 17 in the red zone.
First down got them the points? Or?
Fourth down.
So getting them the first down got them, or they got the touchdown?
Touchdown.
You mentioned second string. How's second string middle linebacker looking? I know that one was kind of an open book coming in a little bit.
You know, Ed Warner, and we moved Noah Harvey into that position as well, so there's competition there. And then Tyreek's been able to play that as well. So that's, you know, we want to make sure that we have depth at that position. And Tyreek's got a good handle on it too. So, you know, we're always going to play our best players and let them compete. But those four guys probably are in that position of competition. We move them around a little bit, not too much. We move around a little bit today again.
You learn anything about any other true freshmen in the scrimmage as you've gone along?
You know, I thought Trey Mosley played well. I thought Julian Barnett played well at the wide receiver position. You know, our offensive line, got some very good freshmen there. We moved J.D. Duplain over there. And so he's only 5 days in, but looks like a good player, obviously. Devontae Dobbs and Nick Saback. Those two guys are probably ahead of the others.
You had a camp like this with this much veteran experience coming back. I mean, you get a lot of first-year starters, but maybe you haven't had that kind of, I guess, experience at once.
You know, I really haven't looked at that. I just look at, you know, how our guys are leading and the expectations they have every day. And I keep saying, you know, our guys come every single day with an object of, you know, they want to accomplish something. And it's been very positive, and they show great leadership, and they work. And when you work, good things happen.
How'd Brian Lewerke look in the scrimmage?
Sharp. That's good.
I know you don't talk about any short-term injuries, but you go long-term. Was there anything that you can tell us about that right now?
No long-term injuries, so should be good. All right, thanks, guys.
Coach D, he does not like to talk about injuries, right? When that last question was asked, he's just like, no long-term injuries. That's it. But, again, MSU held its first scrimmage on Friday, as you heard Coach D say. It was won by the offense, very, very tight. Now, again, when you talk about these scrimmages in practice, they are a modified scoring system. So, you know, when you look at these final scores and numbers, they're hard to gauge because things are modified. They aren't your normal football game, all right? But the offense won 38-37.
Not to mention Coach D always keeps it close.
He always keeps it close, exactly. He does that. So he did note that true freshman Anthony Williams, he got dinged up a bit, so he will not practice today, has not practiced today. And I also want to note that wide receiver Trayvon Morgan, he will be out for about 2 months. You actually looked this up when Coach D was speaking, Jack, and, you know, incoming wide receiver for Michigan State, he will not play at least for 2 months. So, Jalen Hunt is in camp. You know, I brought that story to you during our headliners. Jalen Hunt, you know, the whole Iowa situation, he is in camp for Michigan State now. Again, Anthony Williams, running back Anthony Williams, he's out today after getting dinged up. And again, the offense won that scrimmage 38-37. And also that final point, when it comes to how Brian Lewerke played in that scrimmage on Friday, quote, he looked sharp. So, I don't know how much you want to read the tea leaves on that, but Brian Lewerke looked sharp. D'Antonio also said the true freshman, J.D. Duplain, he has moved back to offensive line. and is in his fifth day of practice after shifting from defensive lineman. Also, Ed Warner, as you heard, and Noah Harvey have been working as the backup middle linebacker along with Tyreek Thompson behind Joe Bocci. So just a few takeaways right now. So some movement there and some updates concerning injuries for Michigan State football. And again, that's what you don't. After what happened last season with this team, you don't want to hear about any injuries for this team. So as far as I'm seeing a comment from Ben on our Facebook page, it looks as though, Jack, with Trayvon Morgan, he had a knee injury, right? Is that what it is? I think that's what I saw.
Yeah, knee injury.
Yeah, yep. Knee injury is what this is being dubbed as, Ben. So, again, he will be out about 2 months with that knee injury. All right, but again, yeah, you just want to get through. I think when it comes to training camp, you want to go through, you know, these scrimmages to so you can develop chemistry. It's all about developing chemistry, you know, getting comfortable out there on the football field without getting hurt. That is the big thing. You know, I understand that, especially when the pads come on, you want to hit, and you know, you that's what really gets, especially those defensive guys, that's what gets you into game mode. But you got to dial it back. It reminds me, I don't know if you saw that first episode of Hard Knocks with the Oakland Raiders last week, Jack, but there was a moment with one of the incoming rookie linebackers for the Raiders. And this dude just, they don't even have on pads yet, but this dude wants to hit. Well, I think they did. They did have one. I can't remember. I don't think they did. But this guy is like going full out, and he smacked one of their important offensive guys, and John Gruden's like, whoa, we need to talk. And he goes to the guy, and he says, look, man, I understand, you know, you're a great player for us. We can't wait to watch you play. But you got to dial it back, man. You know, these guys are important guys, and we can't have any injuries in training camp. And that's a very important thing, man. You know, and some guys aren't wired that way, but you got to learn it. And if you don't learn it, you'll be sitting on that sideline during practice instead of out there playing.
Was this guy a high draft pick, or was he kind of one of the last guys? Okay, because I was going to say, because if he wasn't a high draft pick, that might have been his way of trying to, you know, kind of stand out in training camp.
He's a high draft pick for the Raiders. I can't remember his name.
Was it Cleveland Farrell?
No, I don't think it was. That name doesn't ring a bell.
He was a guy from Clemson. He was their first round pick.
What does he look like? Is he light-skinned dude?
I don't think so. No.
Defensive
lineman, I don't think he's light-skinned. I can look it up, though.
Let's hit our first break, and when we come back, I'll see if I can snag his name for you. But, yeah, you just want to have no injuries, and you gotta know when to dial it back. All right, when we come back, I'll play to you a really bittersweet moment, I guess you can say, when it comes to Serena Williams and what happened in the final that she participated in this past weekend. We'll be right back as we put a bow on this Monday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. All right, welcome back, folks. It's time for Weekend Winners, where we look at the weekend that was and bring to you some of my favorite moments and stories that we haven't gotten a chance to look at. I like to make this a Beyond Local Sports segment. Let's go right to it right now. Weekend Winners starts now.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you
down. Looking for a trainer.
Yeah, we've got a problem here. The physio has come out to take a look at Serena Williams. Uh-oh. Serena in tears. I didn't see what happened, if she was favoring anything. Bianca's going over. Wow. The match is over.
But just thanks to Jehovah for letting me even come out here. And Bianca, you're a great sports person, woman. And thanks for my team. It's been a tough year, but we'll keep going.
Both Serena Williams and Bianca Andreescu, those are my weekend winners. That moment, Serena Williams brought to tears after a back injury forced her to retire in the first set of the Ryder Cup final. Bianca comes over, embraces Serena. They hug. She, you know, talks about how much she admires Serena. That's what sports are all about, folks. Wishing Serena well on her recovery back to the court. Happy Monday. Be easy, people.